think these were kind of a double. How do you think, like, do you think when soldiers came home from war, they came back and were teachers? And if they were teachers, would a veteran history teacher be biased?
You're talking about, or can you give me, like, are you talking about, like, after Vietnam or after?
Yeah, like, could you imagine a Vietnam vet coming home and being a teacher? Because they had all sorts of jobs when they came back.
Yeah. First of all, I wonder what jobs were exempt. Because if teachers were exempt or something from the draft, then maybe they wouldn't. Okay, but just the question in itself, it would be pretty nuts, man. Like, can you imagine, like, having a history teacher that was like, all right, so we learned about World War II, Korea, Desert Storm, and someone's like, you forgot Vietnam. He's like, I'll never forget Vietnam. He's like, it's in my teaching clause that I do not have to teach you guys about Vietnam, because if I taught you every goddamn thing I know about fucking Vietnam.
Why don't you want to talk about that? You want me to talk about teaching you how to rip somebody's head off? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You like, want me to tell you what it looks like when a man holds a grenade underneath him?
You want to learn about this? Have you ever held a grenade pin between your teeth? You Jesus. Can't know. I think it would be just a crazy thing, and as far as, like, being biased, I don't see how you couldn't, because if that was what you just lived in, like, you would come back and you would probably, I mean, you've seen your shit, and you probably have a good amount of PTSD, and you're dealing with kids. Like, I would go nuts if I, just dealing with kids without having PTSD.
It always kind of surprises me when they give you the actual percentage of people that participate in the armed services.
Yeah.
And you do kind of realize at that point, you're like, okay, you know, this isn't something very common when you look at a person. So it does go ahead and put into light, like, oh, not everybody does this. So it does make it more rarefied and, like, more unique and more special. The thing is, like, the reason I think a lot of the post-war stuff gets kept out of kind of more, like, not mainstream, but why people aren't so fully aware of it, is that it's a small segment of society. It's not always in your face. Like, you see it in movies and stuff like that. Like in Forrest Gump. Like, Lieutenant Dan, like, on the side mm-hmm. of the street. Like, there's always kind of that, like, stereotypical, like, Vietnam vet, like, begging for your change on the side of the road, or, like, a broken man. But that was, like, a very small, like, segment of society. So, like, to even, like, see that would have been like, oh, it's something wrong with that one person. It's not all these guys having issues, which I'm sure, how would you go over and see the shit that you saw over there and not have issues?
Yeah, and some people, I think, were probably better compartmentalizing and being able to live, like, normal daily lives. Like, there were people that came over or came back from Vietnam that were probably fairly normal by those standards.
Tom Segura, have you heard him tell a story about his dad, how his dad would always tell him a little bit more information as he got older and asked him about yeah. Vietnam? It's like, when he was young, he's like, hey, dad, did you ever kill anybody? And he's like, oh, no. And then as he got older, he's like, hey, dad, did you, you know, ever kill anybody? He goes, no, but I commanded people that killed people. And then he finally asked me, he's like, Dad, I know I've asked you this before, but did you ever kill him? Oh, yeah, lots of people. But, like, I don't know, having the ability to, like, have that be a part of your life and everything, that's got to be crazy to just have that in your mind.
Well, and then, like, you come back and somehow, by some stroke of luck, you're teaching high school history, and you see these kids having all these, like, stupid children problems. You're like, you're yeah. fucking kidding me. I have to be careful talking about your feelings when I was just over in Korea. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck you.
I don't have fucking fingernails.
Yeah.
Like, my fingernails still won't grow back, and you're fucking criping about your chipped nails.
You're crying and passing notes in class because Bobby didn't invite you to prom. Well, Jesus, I need to fucking, like, bury my friends.
Not to take it in an unserious direction, but if, like, can you imagine if, like, actual movies, like, imagine, like, an action movie actually portrayed, like, the after effect, like, the actual psychological after effect of some of the stuff that, like, the guys in the action movies do. Like, if you take, like, Commando or, like, an Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, a normal Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Like, even think of, like, Conan. Like, he completely destroys his enemies and kills all these people. And, like, if you said that, like, how does Conan really feel? He's like, I feel conflicted. If I'm being honest, I'm a little sad for the people I had to kill.
If I can be vulnerable for a second.
Is this a safe space? And you may wonder, why did he bring in a joke about an action movie? It's because we're doing a one-on-one, ladies and gentlemen. I know it took us 7.5 minutes to get to it, but it's one-on-one time.
He caught me by surprise.
Did I?
Yeah. Another just...
We're pretty far in.
A flawless transition.
All right, so we are a heroes versus villains one-on-one this evening. What are the five categories?
I thought we were doing two separate ones. We're just going to do them all in one. We're doing a heroes episode and a villains episode.
Oh, we can do that if you want.
I just figure if we split them up into two, we'll have... Because if we did this all at once, this would be another two-hour episode.
That's true. Okay, we're going to do heroes tonight.
Okay.
Okay.
You don't want to do them both? I don't know when the girls want to be picked up.
I'm saying this one we're currently recording because they're released at separate times.
Yeah.
It's going to be its own. But yes, tonight, Adam, we can record the second part.
Okay. I didn't want to leave on a...
No, I've thought about this a lot too, so I'd love to be able to do too. Okay. So we're doing heroes. All right, so what are the categories?
Our hero categories are going to be action movies, comedy movies, kids movies, which was much deeper than I thought it would be. Hey, shut up out there, dogs. Scary movies and fantasy and adventure movies.
All right. Do you want to do the ceremonial see who's going first by the flipping of your zoom cam? I'll try to catch on this.
Oh, fuck. We forgot to call it. Heads. All right, you go first.
Okay. Are we doing honorable mention and then, or are we doing winner and then, or top and then honorable mention?
Top. We'll go top, I'll go top, and then you do your honorable mention.
Okay, catch this. Oh, nice. Okay.
Great landing.
I'm going to go with, he's an everyman. He started as an everyman before entering at some point, apparently superhuman status during some of his later movies. I found myself being drawn to people who had more than one movie, so you could kind of see a character arc and some growth. I like growth.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of these guys that get penciled in just a lot of movies.
I know there are, but I don't think anyone has done it in quite the same way that John McClane has done it.
Thank God. I panicked for a second. I thought we chose the same one.
You thought we chose the same person? Yeah. No. I go John McClane for action. Starts out as just a cop from New York just trying to come back and salvage his marriage, and he gets caught up in the terrorist takeover of Nakatomi Plaza. he gets beat the fuck up in that movie. Ends up saving the day. Quite possibly the greatest Christmas movie. And yes, I am of the opinion that Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Dude, don't bring that in
here. Dude, are you kidding me?
I can't get into that debate tonight.
Okay. Anyway, we'll do that during our historically high holiday special.
Yeah.
Anyway, then, as if that's not enough, like a couple years later, maybe even the next year, I don't know if we've established the timeline, but he's just trying to fly home to see his family, who I think he's now transferred to be with his family in Los Angeles. And listen, I'm not singing John McCain's praises. He's got his issues. But on the merit of action hero, this is what this is based on. He gets caught up in another terrorist takeover, this time of an airport.
What are the chances?
Still calls his buddy, Carl Weathers.
Good friend.
Not Carl Weathers. Carl Winslow. What's his name in real life?
Oh.
We've just talked about this recently. Oh my God. Reginald Van Bell Johnson.
I'm looking it up.
I want to say it's Reginald Bell Johnson.
Carl Winslow is... Carl... Oh, no. He's Carl Otis Winslow.
All right, anyway.
Yeah, Reginald Bell Johnson.
Yes. Okay.
It's a weird last name.
He ends up saving the day again, discovering a plot to free a, what, like, supposed to be a Castro guy? The guy who's taking over Cuba. Yeah. And, like, he's gonna be landing, like, come on.
He's not going to Cuba. He's not going anywhere near Cuba.
Then in the third one, which is arguably better than the second, but not better than the first, guess what? He gets caught up again. This time, by the brother. You better chew on that quietly, man. I'm not talking to Adam, just so everyone knows.
But we're both. Nope.
All right. We're having... Nope. There you go.
Dog technical issues.
All right. Oh, you got me. You interrupted my goddamn Die Hard 3 rant. Okay. He gets haunted by the brother of the guy he killed in the first one. But it's on the elaborate cover-up to... What is it? It's a ruse to cover up the theft of all the gold in New York City.
Great crime.
And...
Great theft.
He meets Samuel Jackson. They get to team up.
Yeah. Samuel... He drifts in and out of a lot of just great movies. He found himself in a good position here, I think. Because Die Hard 3 might be...
My second favorite? It has... This is going to be weird. Okay, it has this math problem in Die Hard 3. And I think it's the coolest math problem, and I always try to solve it, like, once, like, every few weeks in my head. Just to see how fast I can come to it. And basically what it is you have a... you have two water bottles in front of you. You have a 3-gallon and a 5-gallon. You have to produce one that has exactly 4 gallons in it. So how would you do it?
Cut the top off the 5-gallon.
Did he just... You know, dude, shut the door. He doesn't have thumbs. If you shut the door, he has to stay out.
All right. We'll cut this part. Are you done? Are we over this?
You know you could just hold it, and then he can't get to it.
I could hear it on the... Oh, he'll just stare the whole time. All right, we'll move past him.
Okay.
Kill him. You got one more chance, boy.
All right. So, he ends up... Yeah, he ends up teaming up Samuel Jackson. Oh, the problem I presented? Someone else solve it. Email us on the socials. Tell us how you solve the problem if you do this to this.
Yeah, that seems simple enough. We'll send you a...
coaster.
Yeah, a drink coaster.
All right. Yeah, and then, okay, so the fourth one, John starts going a little off the rails. And I believe that was Live Free or Die Hard. And in that one, John is out of his element when he has to take out a computer hacker who is threatening the infrastructure of the United States. He gets to team up with, I think, Justin Long. And at that point, he is able to jump a police car into a helicopter. So that's kind of where you start to enter iffy territory.
What are you talking about, iffy? He does a lot of iffy things before that.
Anyway, I'm just saying, despite that kind of stuff, I do feel like John McClane is the quintessential action hero.
Quintessential, definitely. He's right there. He's... and everything else that... why am I blanking on his name?
Bruce Willis?
Yeah, everything else that Bruce Willis has done, I mean, he's kind of been an action guy his whole career because he just fits that mold so well. So there's something about a bald guy like that.
Have you heard, and I don't know how much of a rumor this is, but I've heard in a few ways, is that he developed some type of, like, it was a mental condition that made him, like, really susceptible to suggestion, or someone was able to really take advantage of him, and they say that he wanted to retire earlier in his career, but this person that was kind of in control of him or was able to manipulate him was having him take all these, like... Because you notice how, like, he was making... It was like, goddamn, Bruce Willis is just fucking making everything. He's trying to, like, cash grab.
All the time,
yeah. Yeah, and he's, like all the team-up movies or the buddy cop movies and all that kind of crap or all, the, like, the B-movies that he would be in just for, like, you know, his name in the movie. But, yeah, I can't remember. I wonder how much truth there is to that.
Yeah, it probably wasn't like a Dane Cook situation where a family member took advantage of him, but it
No, because I think his family probably would have stepped in, but it was probably just subtle enough to be like, just do one more. Yeah. Just do one more. And he's like, I guess.
And one more led to two more, mm-hmm. And just down the way. It's funny that you bring up mental illnesses because the guy that I'm going for played in probably another one of my favorite movies of all time, And I didn't really know where to rank this one on it. I wanted to put him in here for this, but I decided to go with something else. I went with...
You can't even remember your guy's name? This is...
I got sidetracked. This does not bode well for you. I got sidetracked. Maximus from Gladiator.
Russell Crowe.
Russell...
Okay, are you going with the character... Okay, so you're going with the character of Maximus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maximus in the story is... just an all-time badass from...
Hold on. Do you actually have that written down, or are you just looking at the screen?
No, it's on here.
Okay.
He just... the whole way that... Did you think that I made a split decision?
No, and I might have actually just even sold out my pick because I Googled movie heroes.
That's what I told you. My guy was up there and he felt uncomfortable.
He's also... Hold on. I'm not going to hold a lot of... You know what? No, this doesn't fucking hold water. Because up here, we got Max Smith, we got Indiana Jones, but then we also have some goddamn Spy Kids movies. We got Jean-Claude Van Damme, we got Jet Li, we have...
Okay, I'll jump to my honorable mention.
Who is that? Is that... That's not James Vanderbeek, is it?
And
then we have, like, Latin X-Man in Hero. I don't know. Okay, I'm not trusting this.
All right.
Anyway.
Okay, so...
anyway, but... Yes,
we'll get off that thing. I'll go to my honorable mention and make that my first pick. Just so there's no odd one. And this one's a very guilty pleasure.
No, I want to hear why you picked Maximus. I don't think you cheated.
Just his whole story and the way that it plays into Marcus Aurelius and that he led...
From a general to a slave. The slave that defied an emperor.
And then he was arrested back in and brought into prison.
I was
prison.
Trying to do the movie tagline throughout the rest of it.
Yeah, he was the leader of an army. Marcus Aurelius wanted him to take over Rome. Marcus Aurelius' kid ended up killing him. And then as Maximus was trying to escape back to see his family, he gets back and sees that his wife and daughter are both crucified, which...
Son.
Wife and son, yeah. Were both crucified, and he buries them. And he ends up getting picked up back by the police... And brought back as a prisoner?
No, he ends up getting picked up by a... basically, it's just like a caravan of, like, slavers.
That's right.
So, and because, like, his estate has been burned, and he's basically sitting there wounded, because he ends up, like, killing his horse right before his estate.
Yeah.
And, like, right within sight of his family, and he's basically just, like... He rode there nonstop for, like, 4 days,
mm-hmm.
and so That's he right. just passes out. So, yeah, he ends up getting taken by the slavers.
And then, just by chance...
Think about that, too. Like, he just had, like, the worst shit imaginable happen to him. He's on his own, like, farm. His own land. And he just passes out there, and he's like, I might be safe. No, he just...
You're not safe anywhere. Land. And especially going from the highest high of being a very decorated soldier and somebody who's...
He was the general of Rome.
Yeah, he was the man. He was the number one guy. So, ends up getting back. He's the general of another army, wears a mask, and I think his name is Mosmo, something like that, the son. I don't exactly remember.
The Caesar's son?
Yeah. Marcus Aurelius' son.
Commodus.
Ends up coming back. He takes his helmet off, and Commodus realizes that it's Maximus, and he's back, and
it's like, oh shit, escaped. My guy said you was dead.
Yeah, and then they rig a fight with him against...
like the undefeated guy.
Yeah, the undefeated guy, and he sends in two lions to try to kill Maximus if the other dude doesn't get the job done. He dispatches the two lions and refuses to kill the guy that he was fighting and completely defies the new ruler of Rome's order. And ends up having to tangle with the ruler of Rome, where he gets stabbed in the fucking... It was like the lung, right before, mm-hmm. by him. It still goes out and ends up disarming him and getting ready to kill him when the ruler, the son, calls for a sword, and his guard's like, mm-mm, bitch, you've dug this hole yourself. We're going to see how this goes. And ends up, Maximus kills him and then dies on the battlefield. Just... an all-around badass story. 300, I think, would probably be pretty close with Sparta and everything, but this is just incredible.
You know what this is? This is just a good old-fashioned Roman revenge story.
Well, and it's just so much blood and so much action.
It's so well done. Like, I legitimately love this movie, and I remember seeing it when I was younger. And you know when you, like, see a movie when you're younger, like, the things that stand out to you about the movie or make it great about that movie are, like, a lot of the spectacle and the cool shit, everything. Mm-hmm. And then when you watch it, you haven't seen it for a while, and you get a little older, you get a little more experience under your belt, and you watch the movie, and then you see the movie as, like, a different movie, and you're like, oh, there was a lot of shit underneath what I was seeing before.
But, like, layers of emotional things that you don't pick up on.
So you pick up on, but, like, this one where he basically, as soon as he finds out that he might have a chance to get back to Rome to get in front of the emperor, he's just like, ooh, I got one goal. He's like, I'm going to get close to this guy, I'm going to kill him.
Everything else has been taken away by this one guy, so of course he's going to want to get the ultimate revenge. And then you play the fact where at the end of the movie, his buddy comes out and buries two figurines of his wife and son where he was killed in the Colosseum, which, glossing over the fact that this happened in the Roman Colosseum and knowing that it still stands today, I've been over and seen it, and there's really just no words. Like, it's incredible that something like this has stood the test of time for so long and is still there. But he goes out and buries the two figurines where Russell Crowe's killed, and he says, till we meet again, just not yet. Like, the emotional draining when you first see this.
And then you see him as he's walking, he's got the hand through the wheat.
Yeah.
And then you see, like, his kid look up and see him when he's, like, in the afterlife and everything. Yeah.
It's so great.
All right, who'd you go as your... You can do your honorable mention first.
My honorable mention is just straight personal pleasure. I don't know how it's received, and thinking back on it, the storyline's a little bit spotty, but every time I see it's on, I gotta watch it. It's Wesley or James McAvoy from Wanted.
Okay.
He's a kid that just had an assassin father that he didn't know about and gets drafted into this league of assassins that gets their call-outs, or I guess their hits, from a loom that's getting weaved in Morgan Freeman, who I could argue would be the greatest good guy and bad guy at the same time in any movie he could be. He plays a hell of a villain.
That's like a guilty pleasure movie, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there are those movies that, like, if you're talking to somebody and somebody asks you, like, what your favorite action movie is, that's the one that you don't tell them that it might be your favorite action movie, but you try to have, like, another one that's a little bit more acceptable to really, like, really?
Yeah, that's what I did with my picks.
Yeah.
But just... this was Chris Pratt, like, pre-Chris Pratt. This is Chris Pratt.
I know, but he wasn't really in it. He got, like, his...
He was nailing his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then gets blasted with the keyboard.
And then making him buy his energy drink for him to give him the energy to blast his girlfriend. And he buys condoms for him.
Yeah, he wants condoms. And he goes, can you get this for me? And he gets them for him. Yeah, just an all-around, it has a lot of humor. It's got Angelina Jolie in it, which I don't know if there's ever been a bad movie with her in it, but she's
beautiful, but she just seems dirty to me.
She's dangerous.
She's going to give you something dangerous.
She can drive a car. They had those rejuvenation
Angelina Jolie tells you she's on birth control when she's not on birth control.
Yeah, Who's yours?
Indiana Jones. I guess I went more, like, traditional, because you know what I did? I went with, like, who I saw as, like, an action hero growing up, because I got to watch, for me growing up, Die Hard was a Christmas movie. I got to watch all the Die Hards. Indiana Jones, those movies were, like, not gospel, but I mean, like, the tapes got worn out at our house.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just... Temple of Doom was scary as shit to me. Like, so I got to watch, like, Raiders, and then when they decided to do, you know, the other ones, it was, it was just Raiders of the Lost Ark. But, see, that even that one, like, at the end where, like, the Nazis' faces are melting off when all of a sudden the stuff starts coming out of the Ark was almost too scary for me, but...
So incredible. Andy,
he was, you know what he was also? He was the first dude that was smart. He uses his brains as much as anything else, because all of this stuff is historical traps and everything, and yeah, he has a bullwhip and a gun, but he gets the shit beat out of him.
And short round.
Short round?
Yeah, he's got short round.
Yeah, but Short Round was only there for the one movie.
Moral support, though.
And actually, Short Round did save his life in Temple of Doom when he burned him and snapped him out of his trance. So, Short Round isn't underrated. Here's the other thing, too. To me, I'm sorry, but that didn't come off as creepy at all.
The man-boy relationship?
Yeah. Weirdly enough, it did not come across creepy, and that goes to say something about Indy. He would never touch a child.
I fully agree. Indy wouldn't. Do you think Harrison Ford is the only action hero that's lived a more dangerous real life than he ever actually played in a movie? With
his flying and everything?
Yeah, he's crashed like 3 planes.
Yeah, I think what he does, just the hobby he selected is dangerous, but I think there are probably people, like, I think Jason Momoa is probably pretty, like, have you seen him on his Harleys and shit?
And I'm sure surfing. And,
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, also he's not on the level that Harrison Ford is.
No, and he's never big bend himself into the back of a car either on a motorcycle.
Or had to land a fucking plane on a golf course.
That's pretty sick. But, that's pretty sweet. Yeah,
so honorable mention goes to Indy. Yeah. I had those interchangeable. I only went with John McClane. Just.
I see the thought process behind both of them, and I. Yeah, maybe John McClane edges him out, just because maybe it's more modern, and there's more explosions.
That's true. All right, comedy. I went first last time, you go.
Oh, that's right. This one and the kids one for me were so deep that it was so tough. I know I was talking about pushing away from, like, just kind of mainstream stuff. This one's never gonna ever beaten, really. Happy Gilmore and Happy is an amazing hero, a guy that can't make a hockey team to save his life, so he meets up with a jolly black man with a wooden hand that somehow teaches him how to hone his ungodly golf skills, and has to go against a terrible villain and Shooter McGavin, but still comes up, and what does he do it for?
All I can think of when you said that is the part where it's like, wouldn't let me play on the pro tour tomorrow. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, because he's like, hell no! God damn it, I'm getting bit my hand off! Oh my god!
They didn't let me play on the pro tour. Ah, because you were black? No! It's like, god damn alligator, bit my hand off!
He got your hand? I got his head.
What is there to say about Adam Sandler? He's a hero in everything that he plays, but it's just so fucking funny to think that, like, that's a storyline that I don't know how it gets written. Like, how do you write a defunct hockey player turns into a golfer, and all he does it for is grandma?
I think that's what you do. You just go, like, I think his mind early on in that situation was, he was like, give me a character, and then we'll figure out what to put that character in a situation. And someone was just like, you're a golfer, but you're only doing it because you were a failed hockey player. And you have this really crazy swing. He's like, let's go with that. And you work your way up and get on the pro tour. And he's like, keep going.
You get a sponsorship with Subway after you get suspended from the tour.
Carl Weathers is your tutor. Yes. Apollo Creed is your golf instructor.
We're going to bring some guy in there to distract you by yelling jackass mid-swing. You're going to beat the shit out of Bob Barker. Deal. Sign me up. Hey, there's so many just clips and one-liners that'll just forever be funny. Yeah. They're kind of, like we were talking about an episode ago maybe with Evergreen stuff. Like, it just stays Evergreen. Like, those jokes will always be funny. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say that it's the only Adam Sandler appearance that will make an appearance between heroes and villains, but I got more.
All right. I went with Deadpool. And when you said Happy Gilmore, I was like, oh yeah, like there were heroes and villains in his movie. But I also would have probably still picked Deadpool just because I was a fan of the character beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the hope for the character when he was going to be in X-Men Origins. And then that was a fucking fat turd of a movie. But, like, Ryan Reynolds got to play him there, but not a good version. But you're like, oh, shit, like, he would be... Everyone was excited because he knew that character.
You saw that his character meshed so well with his personality.
But, I mean, and there's a reason. It's the highest, you know, highest grossing X-rated or R-rated comedy ever.
Is it?
Not now.
Oh.
When it came out, though. It beat out, like, The Hangover.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's
it. But it's... Honestly, it's a favorite character, and it's a guy doing that character perfectly, exactly how you would want that character done.
And just like Sandler, he's the king of the one-liners.
Yes.
Him talking about his big comfy masturbation shoes.
He's just willing to go ahead and go into that spot that Sandler's not going to go because Sandler owns this other spot below it.
And
of like funny but not too crude that he can't be a family movie.
Yeah, he just goes full crude. And he plays off of everybody.
Reynolds is like, you're keep that. I'm not going to operate down there. I'll go up here.
His system of just being able to joke through anything to have a full-on disease in his body that's going to kill him. What do you call it? Fatal disease?
Yeah.
Terminal, yeah. A terminal disease that's going to kill him, and he's still joking with it. His wife in that, I forgot her real name.
It's Monica...
It's like a French name or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I can never remember.
She was in Gotham, too. Mm-hmm. Just
she's in a bunch of stuff. She was like the show Firefly or Serenity. And she's one of those people that does not look like... When you see her, you're like, oh, she's probably like in her like... Maybe like late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see her like 10 years later. It's like, is she still in her late 20s? Like, you guessed wrong from the get-go. Yeah. But she was just like... So she's looked the exact same. She looks really good, though.
She is super hot.
All right. I had... Who did you have as your honorable mention?
My honorable mention is Thurgood from Half-Baked. Dave Chappelle,
mm-hmm.
saving the day. Saving himself and his two buddies from...
cocaine saving dealer. Saving one buddy from Nasty Nate.
Yeah, he did. I guess it's three buddies, mm-hmm. yeah. Saved one from Nasty Nate, got him out of prison. It just... His whole aura of being a custodian, but calling himself like the master of the custodial arts,
mm-hmm.
and doctor calls him custodian, he calls the doctor scientist, mm-hmm. like just back and forth. You just love him from point A to point B. Them having Wesley Pipes and Billy Bong Thornton, mm-hmm. like just it's the epitome of just one of the best stoner movies ever. He meets a girl named Mary Jane. And falls in love with Mary Jane, and then you get the soundtrack to go along with it. He's just the king in that movie.
I wonder, like, can you imagine if, like, that, when that movie came out, like, that guy's gonna be the biggest comedian?
He'd already put in so much time being the great comedian that he was, I think, probably to get the role, because you're in there with Jim Brewer, like, you're gonna
match. You are, but it was a super low-budget movie, so not, it's low-risk, but at the same time, that probably also didn't get as popular. Once, like, Chappelle's Show came out, can you imagine how many people went back to that?
Probably blew up. Yeah, you're talking... You get Saget doing a cameo in mm-hmm. there saying weed is not a drug. You ever suck dick for weed?
Oh.
Well, it's yours.
I went with Carter from Rush Hour.
Wow, yeah.
And actually, I think I actually might want to... No, I'll stick with Carter. I was thinking of Chris Tucker's other role in, I guess you could consider him a hero. So Tucker was hilarious because he was just like the everyman to Jackie Chan.
Yep.
But he was an exaggerated everyman.
He was a dude that grew up the son of an LA cop and had the style.
What?
Never touch a black man's radio.
No, but then I was thinking about his role from The Fifth Element when he's Ruby Rod.
Yeah, yep. Also another quality role that he played. He kind of had that... I think him and Jackie's careers were kind of forever intertwined after Rush Hour because they made
three of them. I love hearing the stories when they talk about them still meeting up. Like, well, he's like, I go over to Japan and see... or over to China and see Jackie all the time. He's like, Jackie's like the mayor of China. He's like, I go over there and he's got like Zantarov walking around with him and I'm right in the middle and he's like... Jackie, what's that building? He's like, I own that one. And he's like, for real? And he's like, yes. And he's like, what about that building? He's like, I own that one too. And he's like, seriously?
Jackie would have been a good honorable mention too, because you not only get that, but you get the crossover with Owen Wilson and Shanghai Noon and Shanghai Nights.
Dude, I thought about that too. I was thinking about Roy and I was thinking about
Chong Wayne. Yep.
All right, kids. You went first last time.
Yeah. I'm not concerned about you taking it. I got a deep Rolodex here. I had one that I was told wasn't a kid's movie also, so...
Okay. I went with Hercules, the Disney version. Well, there wouldn't be really another kids version, but not the kids Kevin Sorbo version.
Well, thanks.
No, I went with, yeah. Disney's Hercules.
I don't think I've seen it.
You've never seen Disney's Hercules?
I wasn't a big Disney animated or really Disney guy. I do have a Disney on my list, but...
I mean, even I saw this when I was younger, but I guess I've also seen it much more recently. My kids' movies are probably... Knowledge is probably much more recent and wide-spanning than yours right now.
Oh, yeah. Yours now is more than mine was back then. Like, I'd never seen the one with the candle holder and the hot girl, Beauty and the Beast...
The Kangle, what?
Candle holder. Thing that used to dance around.
The candelabra?
Yeah, I've never seen that.
Lumiere? That one?
Yeah, I've never seen it. I basically...
Oh, man, you're missing one of, like, the, like, coolest, like, Disney villains.
I work off of Mulan. Okay. And...
Yeah.
Probably pretty much just Mulan.
Okay. Anyway... I'll just give you a little backstory. It's the classic Hercules legend. He's the son of Zeus and Hera. Hercules is usually the son of Zeus and... Okay, anyway. This one. Son of Zeus and another, like, queen of the gods. Hades knows that he's going to... Somehow Hades has this plan brewing that he's going to take over Olympus.
Does Hades have blue hair?
Yes, it's James Spader. Not James Spader. Fuck. Who's the guy that was James Woods?
Oh.
The crazy guy now.
Yeah.
Okay, so James Woods is Hades, and Rip Torn is Zeus.
No.
Yes, it's hilarious. So anyway, Hades finds out that when Hercules grows up, he's going to ruin Hades' plan. So he has his two little minions kidnap baby Hercules, feed him this potion, he has to drink the whole thing, it'll take away his godly powers, and then they can kill him. So they kidnap the baby. They're having him drink all of this. He has to drink every single last drop. A farmer and his wife interrupt the demons when they're trying to give it to him. They spill a drop of it. So he still retains his, like, godly strength. But he's, like, mortal, so he ages. He's raised by these good people. He's kind of an outcast. He finds out he's the son of Zeus. He goes to train with this... how have you not seen this? He goes to train with a satyr, you know, the half-goat man guy. It's Danny DeVito.
Really?
That trains him, yeah. It's Philiticus, and so he calls him Phil. And so then he meets this chick and saves her from, like, this guy, but the chick is really working for Hades because he has to try to finish off Hercules or something. And then Hercules goes on to become a hero and do all these great things. He ends up getting, I think, too cocky or something like that and thinking he's all that. Did I just say all that?
Yeah. It sounds like he was.
Okay. Anyway. Something happens, he falls in love with a girl, she's supposed to trick him, and then Hades attacks or something like that. And anyway, it's a great movie.
You might have to borrow your kid and figure out how to watch this.
You can just watch it without my kid.
Okay, I guess privacy in my own home. For some reason, I was thinking like Hastings, and I was renting it by myself, and I'd have to be like, hey, I got a kid, he's not mine, I found him, but we're going to go watch this.
All right, who do you got?
So my kid... out of my list, I think I have to go with George Knox, Danny Glover from Angels in the Outfield. Real old throwback kids movie. You have Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a child.
You don't go with Tony Danza?
No, because Tony Danza doesn't... Oh, he does adopt him, that's right.
No. It is Danny Glover that adopts him.
Yeah, because he adopts the friend, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Danza's just...
He's the pitcher.
Yeah, he's the...
If we're talking about the hero, technically the baseball hero that everyone celebrates is Tony Danza, because he won the game.
But in my heart...
But we get to see behind the scenes. We get to see who the real hero is. And it's the guy that gave those two boys a home.
Yeah. And the one that believed him. The one that understood that they saw Christopher Lloyd in a very eclectic role.
Why did the Angels come to the outfield? What was it about that team, aside from the name, that made the servants of God break the rules to come help them? Like, did they win? Did they win the World Series? Or those movies never, they're so ambiguous about the level of success for the team.
All it took was one big win for that whole thing to pop off. I think it was them getting into the playoffs.
So they were already that close to getting the playoffs.
Yeah, but they had their follies. There were guys taking fly balls to the head in the outfield, and they weren't great, but they...
Still, it wasn't worst to first.
I think they were garbage. Okay. And then they started showing up, and then Christopher Lloyd shows up, and he goes over and tells Danny Glover, hey, I can see. And then they get up, and everybody starts doing the angel chant. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, there are no angels, but they need Tony Danza to believe that there are, so he gets up and does it, and then the rest of the fans start doing it, and he thinks he has one, and he throws a strike. I would argue Joseph Gordon-Levitt might be the hero in that, but...
At the end of the day, is he going home?
That's true. He's still an orphan without Danny Glover.
Let's keep it with Glover.
Just a fun kids movie that had really, like we say, not a great plot, but it was just a cool fantasy.
I like your pick. I feel like I've been too influenced in my picks by my child's watches and my watching my proxy. My runner-up was fucking Woody from Toy Story. I think Woody has a very good arc.
We need your first one. We need your pick.
I said Hercules.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
I talked about him for literally 3 minutes.
My brain's just so inundated with all these different things. Woody. I gotta see Hercules.
All right. Woody goes from Andy's favorite toy. He gets replaced by Buzz, which also he does not handle it well, so I'm not gonna give him praise for that.
No.
He tries to get rid of Buzz. I don't think he intentionally tries to do what he does to Buzz by, like, he means to knock him behind the desk, and then he accidentally knocks him out the window, and then that's how it kind of pops off. I've watched a lot of Toy Story. I know the nuances of the toy psychology here. So anyway, they end up getting kidnapped by Sid. He does the right thing in the end. He helps Buzz. Tells Buzz, Andy needs you. We're getting out of here together. Saves Buzz from getting launched up and blown up. They then get back into the moving truck, or they don't. He brings him with him. He's like, we're going for the box in the car. They reunite. Second movie, they're best friends. They got a good thing going on. Woody's got Bo Peep. They're close. Buzz is helping him run the room. They get played with equally. Then Woody gets kidnapped. Uh-oh, what's going on now? Buzz goes and saves him. Woody gets hooked up with all of these toys from his old Woody's Roundup show. He used to be the super popular toy. Buzz used to be.
At the collector's house?
That's the guy that kidnaps him because he wants to sell him to a toy museum in, like, Japan.
And he replaces the arm that Woody lost.
He didn't lose it. It was just, like, kind of, like...
torn.
It was torn, but that's why Andy didn't take him to cowboy camp. Because he didn't want to tear it off and lose it more. Anyway, he ends up passing up and saying, you know what? I know I could go be worshipped at this toy museum. It's like, but I miss my boy. I miss my Andy. I
miss my family.
Yep. I miss my Bo Peep. So, he tries to go back. They guide the Stinky Pete, ends up kidnapping him. They end up rescuing, in the end, he ends up rescuing Jesse and Bullseye. So they don't end up getting sent to the toy museum. And, it brings them all together as a family. And he hooks his boy Buzz up with Jesse.
Don't remember that.
Because then, like, by the third movie, like, Jesse and Buzz are together, and that's their little couple.
Did Andy ever realize that he got more toys, just magically?
No, he did. So after the second movie, the third movie picks up where Andy is now, like...
That's where I checked out.
Movie, Andy's going to college. So it's about them, like... They end up going to, like, a daycare.
Oh, weren't Andy, they tossed up in the attic or something like that?
No, he goes to set them by the attic through a series of events. The attic ladder pushes the bag of toys. It gets put into the trash pile. The toys end up getting...
Okay, yeah, I think
and they end up escaping, but then getting in the box to go to the daycare.
Yeah.
So, at this point, this is a kind of, like... There's a weird, like, this is Andy's Toy Story, and then there's the Bonnie, 3 and 4, the Bonnie saga. But no, so he ends up getting them all set up with his Bonnie chick, getting them a new home. And then in the fourth one, he ends up, he loses Bo several years before. And he's been without his partner for, like, the last, it would have been like the last 10 years. So then he actually runs back into Bo during vacation, and he gets to make the choice at the end to go with the rest of the toys and stay with Bonnie, or to stay with Bo. And Buzz looks at him, he's like, I don't know what to do, Buzz. And Buzz goes, it'll be all right. And he's like, yeah, like he's going to have to go with the toys. And he looks at him and goes, Bonnie will be all right. He knows that's his boy, giving him the go-ahead to stick with Bo Peep. And so then he watches them drive off, and he's sitting up on top of like the merry-go-round, and Buzz and all of them are at the back window. And as they drive off, you see Woody go to infinity, and then Buzz is in the RV pulling away, and he goes, and beyond. Or it might be switched around.
That's a cheesy
shot. I'm not going to lie to you, the first time I saw that, because I had not seen 3 and 4 as a kid, because I'd grown out of that, I'm sitting and watching it with the kid, and that happens, and like I'm just like, oh my God.
Got yourself a little man.
It did. I was like, because I saw like, you know, I saw how long ago these, you know.
Yeah, it's just the longest build ever.
It's the end of a journey, man. All right, who'd you have for...
So the one that I got shot down, apparently it's not a kid's movie. I tried to go with Connor O'Neill and Keanu Reeves from Hardball.
That's a movie about kids, not made for kids.
That's maybe where I got things confused, because I forgot that Baby G ends up getting killed. Because if you think
about it, Bad News Bears really isn't made for kids. It's made about... the funny thing is about the kids.
Yeah, with Walter Matthau and then Billy Bob.
Yeah.
So, my honorable mention's just probably my favorite. I don't even know if it's a Disney movie. I think it is. Ratatouille?
Yeah. Remy?
Yeah.
Just I love Remy.
A fantastic mouse, a fantastic cook.
Is that what you identify with? His love for food?
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And I don't know if maybe that's just the inroads that I need.
Isn't Patton Oswalt his...
Mm-hmm.
Katie doesn't like Patton Oswalt's voice. He doesn't like... And I was like, he's perfect for this character.
Yeah, he's a little mousy human being. Yes. Voicing a mouse.
Yes, it's perfect.
It works his way up in one of the most famous French kitchens in the world. Yeah, Gusteau's.
It had fallen on some harder times, but...
Gusteau's gets taken over.
And they start to control...
Yeah.
Linguini.
And it's just the way that it works is it makes so much sense that he's just up there pulling hairs to control arms and legs.
I like how he does this, and then he's like whisking with the hairs and learning how to drive him and everything. Yeah,
he's running the symphony of the man. It's a great movie, probably my favorite Disney movie animated at least.
Okay, pee break before we move on to horror.
Okay.
All right, we're on one back. All right, we got horror. I think it's you first this time.
Okay. Dug deep into the archives for this. One of my favorite scary movies. Probably not as scary now as it was as a kid. I went with... What's his name? Oh, yeah. Billy from Gremlins.
Billy from Gremlins?
Yeah.
Is he one of the Gremlins?
He's the young boy. The young boy who's given the gremlin from his father that he ends up accidentally feeding them too late, but then they have to go around and kill all the gremlins in the night to save everybody from the gremlin overtaking.
Oh, yeah, we were doing heroes, sorry.
Yeah.
I was like, because I know we just talked about this, right? We were walking back from the bathrooms about the villains one night. I was like, didn't he kill them? Like, are you pro-gremlin? Depends on how you're watching that movie, man.
Yeah, there's an argument to be made.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just trying to expand.
To the gremlins, if we were gremlins right now, we'd be talking about this guy.
Well, they weren't allowed to eat after midnight. Like, they didn't have any liberties to be able to do that. It's just a sweet movie that was made...
I'm not going to lie to you, dude. That movie... I don't think I've ever sat and watched that start to finish.
Really?
I've seen, like, chunks of it. But, man, to me, that movie was fucking scary as a kid.
It was super scary, and I think... I don't remember the last time I saw it, but it just...
It wasn't even that violent. It was just... They were like...
They were all creepy. When they would hatch from the eggs, it was really gross.
And then they fucking bait you with Gizmo. Because you're like, he's so fucking cute. Like, oh my god, they're going to kill Gizmo.
Gizmo had to have been what they looked at and made Furbies.
And then when you saw him when he was wearing the headband, and he has the tiny flaming purple, you were just like, get the fuck out of here.
Just the creepiest thing for the 80s. It starts in a very 80s fashion where a father who travels a lot wants to bring his son home a gift, so he goes and visits a Chinese shop or an old Chinese...
Oh, but here's what's funny about it. He travels a lot, wants to get his kid a gift, but instead of getting him a gift from his travels, he just, like, gets home and then goes to some exotic place.
He tried. He tried to make it happen.
Well, here's the other thing, too. Man, that's a pet with a lot of rules.
Yeah, why are we not starting with a dog or a hamster or something? Like, you're starting right up at Gremlins, where you don't know what goes wrong.
Do you have anything that doesn't require, like... How about something with one rule? Can we start with something with one rule? Like, hey, you have to feed and water it. That's the rule, or it dies. Mm-hmm. Like, start, baseline it.
Pick up a shit.
Don't start saying, I gotta start keeping time.
Yeah.
Or I can't get... How the fuck do you clean it if it gets dirty?
No water. Yeah. It's just
dry shampoo the shit out of this?
That wasn't a thing back in the 80s, no. I don't think. We didn't have that kind of technology.
Maybe. I don't know.
It was very rulesy, but...
Does steam count? Because it's wet.
It is water, yeah. So you can't even dry clean him. But he saves the day, though. He comes back, he makes sure that all the gremlins are squashed out. He did lose Gizmo, so that was very sad because he lost his pet, and he was overall an adorable pet, but
doesn't Gizmo come back for Gremlins 2?
I never saw Gremlins 2.
He doesn't lose Gizmo. Gizmo's in Gremlins 2.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess the hero gets his prize back.
Yeah. He still defeats the bad gremlins, though. Yeah. He defeats the gremlins.
Yeah, he saves the world.
Because, yeah, Gizmo isn't a gremlin. I can't remember the name of the character he is. It's not a wombat, but it's something weird like that.
Something crazy.
All right. I'm glad we kind of went in different directions with this. I went Ripley from Aliens. Alien, like all the aliens.
Yeah. Focusing on franchises gives you so much more of a run with the character.
And here's the thing that I liked about it, too, is, like, when, like, the movie, the first one first came out, there were all these options for, like, who would be, like, the hero in the movie. And so I think, like, if you were to, like, look at it from, like, the characters, you'd be like, oh, it's obviously, like, this dude or this person, but, like, she was, like, way down on the list, but then it flipped it on its head. So it's, like, first of all, it's a really simple, like, premise for a horror movie. Like, you're in space, no one can hear you scream, there's a monster loose on this ship, and they were, like, the way she ended up being the one to survive and everything, and then fight it, and then come back in the second one, and even, like, a bigger role. Like, Sigourney Weaver's, like, hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So, but yeah, like, in the second one, to then, like, be, like, fucking machine guns and flamethrower and all that shit, but yeah, because I do feel like Alien or Aliens is kind of a horror movie.
Yeah, it's...
I definitely consider it a horror movie.
Yeah. You're scared. I mean, it's...
All right, who do you got? Oh, did you already go?
Yeah, so my honorable mention is... a little outside the box again. Sean from Shaun of the Dead. Classic zombie movie mixed mm-hmm. with a little bit of humor.
What's his name?
Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg, that's right.
He's always got his fat buddy that I don't remember his name.
Oh, it's, is it Nick something?
It might be, yeah, I don't know his last name.
Yeah, but... Nick Frost.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's Nick Frost.
So, they just went on a streak because you can even throw, maybe just Simon Pegg is the man playing the characters because he's also in the Alien movie with Seth Rogen. Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a very good underrated movie.
I thought
movie.
You were just combining two movies. I thought you, because they did a movie called At World's End, where they traveled mm-hmm. all the bars and the name of
that That's
one.
Right.
And then Seth Rogen did This Is the End. I thought you were going to say he was with Seth Rogen. I was like, no, but no, him and Paul, yeah. Because Seth Rogen played the voice of Paul.
Yep, and then you get Jason Bateman as the FBI agent that protects him, and what's her name? The one-eyed girl, blonde hair, she's in MacGruber.
Oh, Kristen Wiig.
Yeah, Kristen Wiig as the evangelical preacher's daughter who the evangelical preacher...
I feel like we're getting away from your initial pick. We're talking about all of his other good
okay,
movies.
Well, fuck it, I'll go with Paul then. Paul's my honorable mention. Simon Pegg and Paul.
Okay.
Shaun of the Dead is great because
That's not a horror movie.
It's zombies.
Paul isn't.
Oh, Paul. We're picking. It's a character. Okay. All right. Okay. We'll get back. Okay. Back to Shaun of the Dead. He ends up saving the girl that just broke up with him. He saves his parents, which dry British humor to me doesn't always translate.
I was just thinking about that too. I was like, I think that might be close to my introduction to like British humor. And so I think that's a, like, that's either, that's not a fence that you straddle. Either you like British humor or you don't like British humor.
Well, and it's like British Office, bad. American Office, great. Mm-hmm. There's certain things that we just do better. And
well, and the other thing too is like, it depends on like, because I do think some like Ricky Gervais stuff is funny, but I think like it's got to be like different types of humor in the United States. There's so many different types of humor. It's just like, you don't like that type of British humor, but I do like Simon Pegg's type of humor.
Yeah, he's very
funny. Because he also does like physical, like kind of like physical funny stuff.
And the whole premise of having the bar is the safe house where they always have a drink mm-hmm. that they can have. And it's very British, but it's very funny. And the zombies are really well done, I think.
I went with Chief Brody from Jaws.
That's a good pick. I forgot about Jaws.
But like, I was trying to think, I was like, what movie like made like me actually feel a certain way, and something to where I still think about it. Like, do you wonder if like Jaws never came out and it never inspired, like, of course there would be other shark movies and everything like that. But, like, I think Jaws, didn't it put, like, a legitimate fear of swimming or mm-hmm. the ocean in people? Like, a lot of people?
Yeah, it's, for a lot of people that haven't, like, actually seen a shark, which I guess I've seen them in aquariums, but if you don't have, like, a good knowledge of a shark, you just immediately think that every great white looks like Jaws. Mm-hmm. Which is terrifying. Yeah. Because he's taking down boats and...
But, like, yeah, so that movie, like, the shark was so, like, and you look, and you watch it now, and if you, like...
It was animatronic, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so once you actually saw, like, the shark actually, like, come kind of up out of the water, you were just, like...
It killed the illusion.
It was over so fast. It was like, the, you know, the record scratch, and it's like, yeah, that's me. I bet you're wondering how I got here. But yes, that completely like broke the illusion. But if you kind of suspend disbelief, it's an awesome story. But yeah, so this guy is literally scared of the ocean. Lives in a coastal town. He's just a cop, Adam. He's just a cop. And all of a sudden, he's got people getting eaten in his town. And guess what he does? He's like, we got to shut down the beaches. We can't have people getting eaten up in this town.
And this is the last concern on his list, I'm sure. Like, he never thinks that this is ever going to happen.
No, this is probably a nightmare scenario for him. But he's like, listen, I'm going to talk to the mayor. Beaches are going to be closed. We're going to not have any other people getting eaten. Mayor tells him, hey, about that. So this is like summertime and our island kind of needs tourism. Beach has got to stay open, Hoss. And he's like, but there's a shark out there. And he's like, shark schmark. He's like, we'll get some people out there in boats with fucking rifles and patrol around a little bit. Well, guess what happens? Someone else gets eaten in front of a whole bunch of people. Then they got to hire a shark hunter who ends up being a fucking psychopath. And then guess what the cop does? He's like, guess I got to go with this guy. And you get Richard Dreyfuss in there as some like cocky, like, college graduate, marine biologist, hotshot.
Smug coming out of his
ears. Oh my god, so goddamn smug.
Alright, so last category.
Sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah, so this is you first.
That sounds like a sex thing.
Sci-fi fantasy?
Yeah, like that would be a song like, I'll be your sci-fi fantasy.
I did fantasy adventure.
Okay.
Which also, I guess, could be a genre.
That's true. Sci-fi fantasy adventure is probably a genre. Mm-hmm. Okay. I forgot who went first.
I did Goonies, okay. Gremlins last.
All right. I went with Gandalf.
Good play. Safe play.
I don't think it's... Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably, yeah, safe, because what I'm going to say makes it probably safe. So, yes, the entirety of both The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings would not have occurred were it not, like, specifically for Gandalf. He's the one that, in The Hobbit, gives Thorin the idea and the key to the mountain and the map, and accompanies them as far as he can. He's also the one that goes to see if Sauron is still living and gets captured. He's also the one that helps get Bilbo released and comes and defends in the Battle of the Five Armies, gets Bilbo home. Then he ends up figuring out that Bilbo has the One Ring, guides Frodo through Middle-earth, dies, fighting a fucking flaming winged fireball.
Yeah, it was a bad matchup.
The Balrog? Yeah. So comes back with a fresh new look, all white. You know how hard that would be to keep clean in Middle-earth?
He's a wizard.
But the thing is it does get a little dirty, but it's just around, like, you know, the part that would touch the ground.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're telling me you're not running with all them horses all the time, you're not getting mud splattered on that.
Come on. You're not rolling it up when you're walking around.
You choose one side or the other. You're a wizard, and the whole thing stays clean, or don't make us think that it's just staying on the hem.
Yeah, you have some Tide at home, I'm sure, that you could have cleaned that up with.
Yeah, but anyway.
I don't know why, but the first picture that I always get is him, the fight on the bridge.
Yeah, that's against the Balrog with the guy with the whip.
Yeah, it's probably his best scene for me.
You shall not pass.
Yes.
And he goes on to, like, take one of the guys to the city that's getting fought over in the Return of the King, and he gets the whole defenses of that city. And he has to
that's a good
defenses.
One, too.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of great fight scenes.
Yeah. Then he goes to Mount Doom, or to the gates, and he's getting ready to fight with those guys to give Frodo a chance to get to the... Listen, he's the driving force. If he's the Tom Brady of the Fellowship and of Middle-earth. He won with the Patriots when he was, you know, in The Hobbit. But guess what? Was he too old? Did he not have it anymore? Throw him in the same type of role with the Fellowship of the Ring.
Go down to Tampa Bay and the Fellowship of the
Ring. There you go. Still gets him to Mount Doom. Instead of getting that ring, he destroys that ring.
Ageless wonder.
There you go.
Well, yeah, that's going to be a tough one to follow up. I got to go a different vein. And I went with Ben Stiller in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. You ever seen it?
I've not seen, no.
It's visually being high and seeing him in Iceland is... It's amazing. If you watch it on a high-res TV or UHD or something like that, it'll just blow your mind. But
I think I may have seen... Is he in a hot springs or some type of pool or something?
He longboards through glaciers in Iceland. Oh. So he's a...
I'm confusing the sights from that, from probably that Zac Efron travel show where they go to Iceland and look at all like the... Yeah.
Yeah, so he's... He works for Time Magazine, and he has a certain job at Time Magazine, and he's like a risk coordinator or something like that.
Okay.
And he's just always played his life as safely as possible because of his job, what he does. And he has...
Wait a second. Is this the same job that he has in Along Came Polly, where he's an insurance risk adjuster?
Sort of. Okay. Except for he... Yeah, I mean, he kind of plays a similar character as far as it's safe. But it was originally a book back in, like, a long time ago, like, early 1900s. Mm-hmm. And there was an original version that was made in, like, 1945 that was black and white. And it was really pretty good. But this one just expounds on it because he has a field photographer that sends him back pictures that they've had this long 20-year relationship together. And one day he gets a letter from him as they find out that Time Magazine's starting to close down its print edition and just move everything to digital. So this guy sends him back a note and a roll of negatives and says, I think it's like slide 25. In this picture, slide 25, I captured the essence of life. And I want this to be on the cover of the last Time Magazine ever. So he pulls out the negatives and he's looking. That slide's gone. And he knows that he has to get this. The photographer's already sent it over to the editor and said, this is the slide that I need. Walter has it. Get it from him, and that's the one that you'll develop and put on there. So the guy comes to Walter. Walter realizes that it's missing, but he has this other roll of negatives of all these places that the photographer's been and where he should be to run into him to try to get the picture or the negative if he didn't send it or whatever. So he ends up telling the guy, yeah, I'll get it to you, give me a second, and follows all the way across the world. He goes over, I think it's into Scotland, and then he sees that there's a boat in one of the pictures, mm-hmm. in one of the negatives, and it's registered in Greenland.
So he's just following clues to all these places, yeah. like a kind of a worldwide voyage to try to track down.
And
looking for clues and all these
in pictures. This time where he's just never done anything in his life, he goes on this full-on exploration to Iceland, to Greenland, and he ends up, one of the things that came with the letter was a wallet that the guy had given him for 20 years mm-hmm. of being his guy back at home, and he doesn't really think much of it, so he keeps trying to track this guy down, and every step that he gets to, he realizes that he just missed him. Like, he gets to the boat, talks to the captain. Captain's like, he was here 2 days ago. We mm-hmm. just dropped him off in this port. Ends up chasing him down. Never ends up finding him. He's just always one step short. Returns back to America. Tells the guy what happened. Ends up getting fired from Time Magazine. Goes over, talks to his mom. And in one of the negatives, he sees like an archway.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know what it is. But he goes to his mom's house, tells her what happened, throws away the wallet, walks into his mom's front room and realizes that it's the music stand holder on her piano.
Mm-hmm.
And he had come back to America and talked to his mom. Mm-hmm. And his mom says, yeah, he came back. He told me all this stuff. He told me what a great guy you've been. He explained everything that he's done in life. And so he surmises from the clues where he's going to be. And he ends up flying over and meeting up with the guy. And he sits out, they find like the rarest snow leopard in the world, and he ends up getting to be there when the guy takes the picture mm-hmm. of the snow leopard. So like he's
fulfilled. So Ben Stiller's not, I'm guessing, Walter Mitty.
He is, yeah.
Oh,
he's Walter Mitty chasing down the guy.
Oh, so it sounds like what it's, see, it's a misleading title because it sounds like this other guy's got the secret life. So it sounds like Ben Stiller's going after to find out about the secret life of Walter Mitty.
His secret life is always his mind wanting to do the things gotcha. That this guy does. Like, he's living vicariously through him.
I still want to watch this, despite yeah. you describing the whole movie.
Well, and I don't want to give away the end, but... Okay,
then don't do that.
Yeah, it's just the imagery is incredible. Like, watching him conquer all of his own fears mm-hmm. of going out and doing things and putting everything in his imagination into practice is... Like, he's almost the hero of his own story at that point, which I find to be very cool.
All right. I went way more simple than you did. I just went Dutch from Predator.
Also great.
That was for honorable mention.
Yeah.
I think with Dutch, guess what? What you see is what you get.
You missed your two picks.
Huh?
You missed your two picks.
What do you mean?
You did Alien and Predator, and then we ran into Alien versus Predator. The movie.
What are you talking about?
Alien versus Predator.
Yeah.
You ran your two franchises together.
Yeah. That happened in real life. It was horrible. No, but Dutch, what you see is what you get. You're getting Arnold Schwarzenegger at just his peak juiciness.
Yeah. Just
all kinds of freaking roided up. You get a Jack Carl Weathers. You get the handshake. When someone says, like, you know when they say the play?
You know.
You know what they're talking yeah, about.
The catch, the same thing, the handshake.
Exactly.
It's yeah. that, if, the arms.
If you say the handshake, it's that grasp, that Dylan, you son of a bitch. That
arm wrestling grasp.
Mm-hmm. What's the matter, Dylan? I got you pushing too many pencils. Oh.
I went pretty normal with mine. My honorable mention's Danny Ocean from Ocean's 11.
Mm. See, I like that one because you did do a franchise guy.
Yeah.
You got to see Danny evolve.
And Clooney's played in fucking everything. Men Who Stare at Goats.
See, he Danny was in Ocean is how
Bastards. Yeah.
I feel like Danny Ocean, that's how I imagine George Clooney is probably the most like in real life.
Suave, debonair.
Very nice.
Always well-dressed, probably just two steps ahead of everybody he's ever met. Yeah, he's so cool.
And even in that situation, I mean, he's robbing from some pretty shitty people. Does that make him a criminal?
Yeah, he's robbing Al Pacino.
One of them, I think he does it in one of the movies. The other guy is Andy Garcia in the first one.
Oh, yeah. So he gets Pacino, maybe.
He's like great value Pacino, I think.
Yeah, a little bit. He has that same aura to him. He doesn't... He could never play Tony Montana, but he could probably play Tony Montana's, like, slow brother.
Johnny Montana. Johnny Montana. All right, man.
Oh, that's a clasp down on heroes. Now we just gotta do villains.
All right, stay tuned, guys. Later. Peace. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for another episode. If you like what you heard, hit that subscribe and like button. Follow us. If you didn't like what you heard, still hit that anyway, because we'll probably cover something in the future that you do like. Please follow us on our social media. Adam, hit them with it.
Our Instagram is historicallyhighpod, historicallyhighpod, and we are on Twitter at historicallyhigh, that's historicallyhi.
All right. And if you guys want to send in any feedback, suggestions, hit us up on those two, or you can even do it on Gmail. It's historicallyhighpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again.
Peace.